This is the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, Dr. Andy Johnson. Topic of today's conversation is constructivism, reading, paradigms, a transaction, and I was wrong. Now, this podcast, when I started writing, went a completely different direction than I had intended. And that's the beauty of writing, and I do write out my podcast, is that sometimes you write to see what it is you have to say. And that little gopher in the hard ground of your subconscious mind sometimes pokes its head out and says, you need to write and say this thing. So, I was rereading Eric Paulsen and Ann Freeman's book this morning, Insight from the Eyes, The Science of Effective Reading Instruction. A great book, and I heartily recommended it. And I started thinking about stuff. And I started asking questions. How is it that one interprets the same thing differently across time? How is it that one can read a book, have an experience, or observe phenomena and draw completely different conclusions when the only thing different is the time in which it was read, experienced, or observed? Is time a variable in comprehension or understanding? Is it a variable in constructing meaning? Well, let's look at reading. A book that seemed so insightful at one point, with the passage of time, can sometimes become meaningless. Likewise, books or texts that I once thought meaningless can sometimes be filled with insight, interesting, important ideas with the passage of time. Same book, same person, same brain, different time. When reading a holy book, the same verse or passage often means different things to me at different points in my life. The holy book stayed the same. The person, me, is the same. What has changed? How could it now have a different meaning? How could it now seem so insightful? Now, this is an Andy observation here, and this kind of popped up, and it's a little aside. And you don't have to agree with me here, but to me, to see a holy book as a literal unchanging document stuck in historical time is like pulling off the wings of an eagle. It's stuck there in time. It cannot ride the air currents. It cannot soar high and see. And there are different holy books, and they may include or not be limited to the Bible, the Quran, the Gita, the Torah. These are sacred texts. And sacred is that which moves you to a higher place. It could include experiences, holy books, religion, music, prayer, meditation. These all have the potential to provide a vehicle where one might encounter transcendence and where one might be better able to nurture self, others, and the environment. Seeing a holy book as a dynamic living entity growing and changing as you grow and change enables it to come alive and to speak to you in this time and place. It speaks to you today and tomorrow, and it speaks to that part of you that is above time and space. The eagle soars high. And I'm talking about reading instruction here, but I'm also talking about holy books and sacred texts and theories and paradigms. So let me define my terms here, and in doing so, I do not seek to promote a single religion or religious views, or more importantly, to denigrate others. Each person's perspective is sacred to them and to their journey. Now, as I was working on this podcast, this is what popped out of my head, this next part. I recently did a podcast in which I sought to create a comparison between one thing I had experienced as a kid growing up in a Lutheran church and the top-down reading mandates being imposed by the state of Minnesota. And it was a clumsily written comparison. But more importantly, it denigrated a particular religious view and experience. And I was wrong to do this, and I apologize. I was not living my values. The point I was trying to make was a good one, that top-down mandates disempower and devalue teachers' knowledge and experience. They are an experience in which the individual is erased in favor of the assimilation of the collectives. That's the point I was trying to make. But there are reasons, but reasons are not excuses. And there's no excuse for putting something out there that might offend the religious or spiritual perspectives of others. Then again, I was wrong. I screwed up, and I am sorry for that. Luckily, a podcast listener was good enough to call me out on it, and very forcefully, I might add, and the message penetrated, and I knew instantly that I was wrong, so I deleted it and went back. And you should note that I do listen to and read the comments made by listeners, readers, and viewers of my material. I take it very seriously when people say things and make valid points. I listen and allow myself to change when presented with new information or valid arguments. And a valid argument is different from calling me names or making pejorative statements or simply stating that I'm wrong. But I do listen because I am not always right. I'm sometimes not right. Do I want to say I'm sometimes wrong? Let me say I sometimes evolve or have different perspectives. Now, the science of reading people give the impression that there are timeless, proven, universal answers for reading instruction. And by the way, when I do workshops and webinars, I do not give answers. I give ideas that you can use to answer your own questions. And the question is, how best do I teach this kid in front of me? That's the basis of everything, or should be. Now, the READ Act in Minnesota is based on the naive assumption that there is a single approach or method or set of strategies that work best for all readers for all times. And they have identified a list of letter sounds and patterns and reading subskills that must be taught in a prescribed order and in a predetermined way. And they have identified three professional development programs that they consider truthful and inerrant and that everyone must take. Heather Edelson, Representative Heather Edelson, is the sponsor of the READ Act. Her and those who wrote the READ Act believe that they have the truth about reading and reading instruction. They believe that they have found what others of us could not see, and that they are right, and I and a whole bunch of other literacy experts are wrong. So they pass laws and standards that mandate their perspective, and we are forced to comply. Now, going through the READ Act line by line, you can see plainly that it's based on false assumptions and I-thinkisms, and it's not based on good reading science. Those who wrote it certainly were not literacy experts. They certainly did not have more collective knowledge than the International Literacy Association or the National Council of Teachers of English. It's not based on peer-reviewed research, and evidence is different from research. Research is peer-reviewed. Evidence is simply data. But there will be a time when Heather Edelson and others are confronted with the wrongness of their views. I predict it will be in about 5 years when research-based data shows that the $100 million spent on this money could have been spent on things that actually make a difference, like healthcare and economic development opportunities. This money will have been wasted, and students will be worse off than they were in 2023 when the bill was passed. And a lot of good teachers will have been forced out of the classroom. We do not, in Minnesota and elsewhere, have a shortage of classroom teachers, as some would insist. We have a shortage of teachers willing to put up with the bullshit who have left the classroom. But licensed teachers, there's more than enough. But what will happen when confronted with this data? How will Representative Heather Edelson account for the difference in what she once thought was right and good, and what 5 years and $100 million shows to be wrong and bad? Will she and other science of reading zealots be able to change? Now let's look at change. I have changed. The book I wrote about reading instruction in 2008 is slightly different from the one I wrote in 2016. And the book I wrote in 2021 about reading instruction is slightly different from that book written in 2016. And the book I'm working on now in 2024 is slightly different from any of the books previously written. In the interim between books, I continue to read and review research, attend conferences, interact with other scholars and researchers, interact with teachers and people online, and most importantly, I tutored struggling readers. And tutoring struggling readers is perhaps the most powerful form of professional development. It's not an abstract intellectual exercise when there's a kid in front of you. Tutoring a kid, you have to put your research money where your practitioner mouth is. You have to come up with answers to problems every day. You have a real-world kid in front of you, and what you do and don't do has real-world consequences for the life of that kid. Now, the Christian holy book says that you cannot put new wine in an old wineskin. That's because gases develop as the wine ferments. A new wineskin is flexible and expands. An old wineskin has dried out and is less flexible. When the fermenting wine creates gas pressure, the old wineskin won't stretch, and it eventually explodes, destroying both the wine and the wine skin. You cannot have new experiences, gain new knowledge, and go back to your old ways of thinking about things. Now back to the offensive podcast. I made a mistake. And when I misstep so egregiously, I tend to beat myself up. But as I say to others, why beat yourself up when others will do it for you? But here's something I've learned. By forgiving others when they misstep, I'm better able to forgive myself. And I've become much more understanding in my older years. I'm 66. Because I know others like me will have bad moments, make bad decisions. I know that emotions and past experiences sometimes get in the way. And I know I'll make missteps in the future. We all will. By understanding the missteps of others, we tend to be a little more forgiving of our own. So I hope that people will continue to call me out when I misstep, because I will. But I will listen. And I will try to change when I am wrong, because I will be wrong in the future. Absolutely. No doubt about it. Back to the constructivist focus and reading. Because that's what this is about. It is the reading instruction show, after all. Reading is creating meaning with print. It's not decoding or deciphering. Deciphering is only one part of reading. Meaning does not reside solely on the page. Rather, reading is a transaction between the text and the head. And in a transaction, both parties give something. This means that what's in the head transacts with what's on the page to create meaning. And when I was a kid growing up, I could never figure out the new wine, old wineskin analogy. It made no sense to me. But as I grew and experienced, as I read various holy books and text and had experiences, the gases began to ferment. I began to see things differently, and I realized I could never return to my 17-year-old small-town view of the world. I could never return to the safety of thinking there was an absolute view of things. That, in order to ferment, I had to leave my old wineskin behind. So reading instruction, good reading instruction, is not simply teaching a series of reading subskills in a predetermined order. Children do not learn to read by mastering all the things on a scope and sequence chart. You can't direct instruction your way to good reading. Children are not standardized products. So it's naive and unscientific to think that you can mandate a standardized experience. Now, currently I'm reading a book by Emilia Ferrario and Anna Teborowski, and I messed up those names terribly, I'm sorry. But the book is called Literacy Before Schooling. And they did a series of ingenious experiments or studies with young pre-literate children, ages 2 to 5. And they asked them to look at words and pictures and sentences and tell what they meant. And they found that children possess conceptualizations about the nature of written language long before the intervention of systematic instruction. That there's this natural inclination to use pictures, words, sentences, and symbols to create meaning. It's a natural human phenomenon to put order to things and create meaning. And separating decoding or deciphering from meaning is not natural, but a result of schooling. Children are taught to reject meaning in favor of deciphering. And this is not a natural inclination. The consequences of this is reading instruction that forces children to forget about meaning until they've mastered deciphering. And this, my friends, is an impediment to the development of their full literacy potential. Meaning that they have a more difficult time learning to read. They're asked to ignore their own natural linguistic experiences in favor of deciphering exercises. This not only impedes their ability to learn to read, but it makes a joyful experience miserable. So good reading instruction is that which best enables each child to develop their full literacy potential and to fall in love with books. And that reading instruction is going to look a bit different with each non-standardized human being. So what is a theory? A theory is a way to explain a set of facts. It's used to understand and interpret phenomena. A theory is like a dot-to-dot picture in which each data dot is a bit of research. And different theories connect different data dots differently. Theories are neither right nor wrong. Rather, they are robust or weak depending on how many data dots are connected or ignored. That means that the same phenomena, which is reading, can be observed by people with two different theoretical perspectives and interpreted differently. And again, theories are neither right nor wrong. They are robust or weak. And the problem with the science of reading zealots and the Read Act of Minnesota is that the Read Act is based on a simple view of reading. The simple view of reading leaves a lot of data dots unconnected. There's a lot of facts, research-based facts, not accounted for. For example, we don't read every letter. We don't read letter by letter. We have empirical evidence to show that. Our eyes do not move in straight lines from left to right. And we can only perceive that upon which our eyes fixate, and we fixate on only about 60% of the words. And there is 10 times more information flowing from the cortex to the thalamus in the brain than from the thalamus up to the cortex during the act of reading. And finally, the cortex actually directs the eyes during the act of reading. The bottom-up theory or simple view of reading is a weak theory because it does not account for these data dots. Too much data dot information is left outside the dot-to-dot picture. Now, we interpret phenomena, we construct reality based on our theories about things. And our theories about things are built on the knowledge we have about how things work. And as our theories expand, our interpretation of things changes. Theories in a scientific world are not inerrant static entities. Theories are meant to grow and evolve as new information is discovered and as new data dots are put on the page. And when old theories can no longer connect all the dots satisfactorily, they're discarded and new theories arise. That's the way of things in the scientific world. Now, the Read Act in Minnesota is based on a false assumption, on false assumptions that have no basis in science. It's based on a very restrictive and weak theory of reading. It's an old wineskin that does not expand with the gases caused by knowledge-based fermentation. Now, a paradigm is a way of looking at things. In science, a paradigm is a distinct set of concepts or thought patterns that include theories, research methods, postulates, and standards for what constitutes legitimate contributions to the field. Paradigms are like a big ship. They're harder to turn around. They're harder to change than theories. Paradigms include how we develop knowledge and what constitutes legitimate sources of knowledge. And here comes the rub. Within the science of reading paradigm, personal experiences and anecdotal evidence are seen as legitimate sources of knowledge that can and have been generalized to larger populations. the paradigm in which most literacy experts operate discount these as legitimate sources of knowledge. This has been the Reading Instruction Show. I am your host, Dr. Andy Johnson.